The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Hardy ho, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his personal masseuse, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 65 of The Big Picture for the week beginning June 26. And coming up on today's show, the Differently Abled Edition. You see, last week, our review of Finding Dory got us thinking about film and TV that build their storylines on disability. And we're going to reveal the best ones, the ones that do it the best.
Well, unless we're talking about Me Before You, which we will be talking about later in the show, Mark, the disability film that has people with disabilities incensed.
Okay, but then we're going to talk about the best ones. And speaking of things that actually should get us angry before we talk about the best ones, the ABC's new Indigenous sci-fi drama, Clever Man, that cleverly highlights our poor form when it comes to Aboriginal and immigrant policies.
Oh, man, all of that still to come on the show. But before we get to all of those kind of things, also around this week, Mark, is Independence Day Resurgence at cinemas, if you can believe it.
I have been waiting many years for this film.
You've been waiting 20 years, actually, since the first Independence Day came out. All the cast members are back, apart from Will Smith, but everybody else is back. And there's new blood being brought in, including Australia's own Liam Hemsworth. We will be reviewing this film on the show next week. But Independence Day Resurgence is smashing a White House at a cinema near you, somewhere near you.
Almost as exciting as Independence Day Resurgence, the election. When actually Australia Votes is coming this Saturday on July the 2nd, and guess what? That's right, we're going to get to watch it on TV every last minute
for
of the
hours
election.
And hours and
it's
hours
of updates.
It's the ABC's
live telecast starting at 5:30 and going into, well, whenever they decide that someone will throw in the towel. So leading this televisual event will be Lee Sales, political editor Chris Ullman, and ABC election analyst Anthony Green. Look, I've got to say it's better than the commercial version. Let's go with that. If you're interested in all this sort of stuff, probably the best sort of analysis you can get of the election coming this Saturday.
Something completely different to that is also at cinemas in what looks to me to be some kind of mashup of The Good Dinosaur, Zootopia, and maybe Kung Fu Panda 3, Ice Age Collateral Damage, which has got end-of-the-world events happening for all those famous dinosaurs and characters from the original Ice Age movies. So for the fifth installment of the Ice Age...
you mean Collision Course?
I was going to say Trilogy, or what is it now? Five Rilogy. Ice Age Collision... No, isn't that called Collateral Damage?
No, it's Collision Course.
I'm calling it Collateral Damage.
Well, it probably would have been a better title.
It would have been. Is it called Collision Course?
No, it's called
Collateral
Collision
Damage
Course.
Is a way better title. Anyway, Ice Age Collision Course is at cinemas now. We're going to talk about it on the show next week, where I will continue to call it Collateral Damage.
Another title you could easily get confused over. This week we see the release of Marvel's Agent Carter. Okay, so years before Agent Coulson and his S.H.I.E.L.D. team swore to protect those who cannot protect themselves from threats they can't actually conceive or see, for that matter, there was Agent Peggy Carter. You might remember Hayley Atwell as Marvel
Captain America's
sort of girlfriend, founder of S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, she pledged the same oath, but in a world in 1946 where women aren't actually allowed to do much after the men come back from the war, she's finding it hard to be a secret agent until all of a sudden she runs across Howard Stark, who says, "Peggy, I need your help." And yay, hey presto, we've got a whole television series.
When is that on?
It's on 7 Flix, so 7's new digital channel. It started actually June 20, and so it's on Mondays at 8:30 p.m. And Channel 7 are doing one of those really unfortunate things. Good series, but they're playing 3 episodes at a time like they couldn't get through it quickly enough. I have no idea why.
In entertainment news this week, Mark, the story behind the building of one of the world's most iconic and spectacular buildings, the Sydney Opera House, is going to be made into a movie. That's right. Danish architect Jørn Utzon. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Is that right? You've got Danish blood.
I'm married to Danish blood.
So you've got it somewhere?
I didn't inherit the pronunciation. No.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. Anyway, Jørn Utzon. So this is going into production. And the working title of this movie, Mark, is Utzon, the Man Behind the Opera House. I really hope by the time this hits cinemas, there is something a little bit catchier than Utzon, the Man Behind the Opera House.
Yeah, I know, because it's a very big building and a lot of people could be standing behind it. Well, in other entertainment news, Steven Spielberg is re-teaming with his Bridge of Spies scribe, Matt Charman, and producer Mark Platt on a pick revolving around legendary US newsreader Walter Cronkite. Now, I don't know if you know Walter Cronkite, but in my line of business from journalism, he's just legendary. Cronkite was an American broadcast journalist best known for anchoring CBS News for 19 years. He reported on everything from Vietnam to Watergate, Gate, the Iran hostage crisis, to the assassination of JFK. During the height of his career, he was known as the most trusted man in America. Well, Spielberg's film is going to focus on Cronkite's relationship with the whole Vietnam War and the way his reporting on it actually changed public opinion into seeing it as an increasingly unwinnable conflict.
Well, I wonder who's going to play him. Freeman. For anyone who doesn't know, Walter Cronkite doesn't have the same skin color as Morgan Freeman. But Morgan Freeman can play anyone, right?
False. Speaking of true or false, I've actually got a personal interest in seeing film handle disability particularly well. I mean, regular listeners know that I have three sons, one of whom struggles with developmental disability, and that sort of stuff entertainment basically handles badly. So we often want to see what sort of good stuff we can do. And this program today, we thought we'd devote a lot of the time to seeing disability handled well on screen and on film. One of my top films for our differently abled edition would have to be Rain Man from 1988. Mm. You know, that drama starring Tom Cruise as a selfish businessman and Dustin Hoffman, his autistic brother. There's this famous scene, Ben, for our true and false, there's this famous scene. Raymond refuses to get on an airplane because airlines are dangerous, he says, and Charlie, his brother, can't make him budge, so he asks him if there is any airline he would fly on. Raymond replies, Qantas. Qantas has never crashed. True or false?
I believe that was true.
Well, we'll find out after the break. Actually, not a break. We'll just do a bit of a review and then you can find out.
Yeah, not a break at all. We're up to What Your Kids Are Watching, our first review segment for this edition. And as a part of our Differently Abled edition, we thought we'd have a look at what TV has to offer when it comes to characters with physical and mental challenges, especially when it comes to kids. Is there a program that does more than make them a bit part or an object of sympathy? Well, Mark thinks he's found one you'd be happy to put your kids in front of, so long as you don't mind them turning your couch into a flying reptile. Welcome to DreamWorks Dragons.
Yeah! The Dragons are back.
Come on, let's see what you got.
In a brand new weekly television series. And the training has just begun. So join Hiccup and Toothless.
This is your best idea yet.
And their friends from Burke as they meet all new, never-before-seen dragons. This is your chance to see your favorite dragons in all new adventures.
Well, DreamWorks Dragons is a spin-off, obviously, of the incredibly successful How to Train Your Dragon films. And it's set between the first and second film, if you want to sort of put it in a sort of chronology. It stars Hiccup, the bumbler-come-good son of a Viking chieftain who teaches his village how to ride rather than hunt dragons, and a large assortment of crazed but kind of lovable characters.
But who's the character that's got a disability in Dragons?
Basically everybody. Honestly, yeah? The village is full of positive images of disability. Huh. You've got Bucket and Mulch. They're these fisherman farmers. Bucket's missing his right hand and Mulch is missing his right hand and left leg. And both of them have got hooks in place of things. But they're basically just comic relief characters having fun. None of the jokes, though, are directed at them, okay, for their disability, but just because they're people. They show up in a majority of the episodes in the series and their prosthetics aren't mentioned much. They're just normal life. Likewise, Mulch has a brain injury, okay? He's lost half his brain, apparently, in some sort of accident. And this is not dealt with as a joke. It's just part of life.
That's highly unusual for kids' entertainment. I don't think I've ever can think of any character like that.
I'm only getting started. Gothy is another character in the series. She's a small, hunched, you know, woman, okay, an old woman, who is nonverbal. She can't speak. So she's got a range of ways of communicating. But this is just considered to be cleverness, not disability.
You just mentioned as you were rattling off that list of characters just before that, you said jokes aren't directed at them or the situation they find themselves in. Is that what is so good about the way they're presented?
Yeah, one of the great things about disability in the Dragon series is the fact that no one's walking on eggshells around the characters to begin with. And this is one of the problems about how disability is handled. They're always great objects of sympathy, as if they have no potential for life or you would have been such a wonderful child if only this hadn't happened. And yet they could actually be just great kids. And of course, the hero in this entire series, Dragons, is Hiccup. And Hiccup not only has lost his left foot, and so he has a prosthetic foot, which he's made himself because he's a really clever kid, but also he rides Toothless, who is a disabled dragon, you know, who has lost part of his sort of tail fin, and so he needs a prosthetic to fly. It's all about really about triumph and the ability to overcome these things rather than make them define you. I guess for me, the best thing about the way that Dragons handles disability is it's a normal part of life. It's not something that makes someone somehow sectioned off to be treated as an object of pity.
So do you think, incredibly, this animated TV show for kids, that we're talking about a perspective on disability being demonstrated that reflects something of how God himself reflect, like, his own perspective on disability, that's actually coming through in Dragons. Absolutely. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's not like a, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about like a religious program. It's clearly not that. But the attitude that Dragons displays is very close to what the Bible would say about disability. There, for a start, are no normal kids. I mean, I think every parent who's parented for longer than 15 minutes realizes after a while that average just doesn't exist. All those wonderful manuals that were supposed to help you about what to expect when you're expecting just don't really cover children. And it's great because we discover in Dragons, for example, that every kid has their problems. Some of them are physical or mental struggles. Others have emotional struggles. Others have sort of, issues with pride and selfishness and things like that. So God's perspective is that we all have issues. The second thing is that God provides these things. They're not accidents. They're part of the life that God has designed so that we can actually be drawn closer to each other, which is what you see in Dragons, but most importantly in real life, closer to him. When we find that we need to rely on God, we find ourselves in our natural state. Disabled kids often have that ability to go straight to that position because they know they need help in things, and they tend to have a much easier path to faith. At least that's been my experience with the kids we knock around with.
Dragons is currently available anytime you like on Netflix and is rated PG for mild fantasy violence. Mark, before we did our What Your Kids Are Watching segment for this week, you posed a true or false statement to us. What was it?
It was basically the idea in the film of Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman's character Raymond comments on the only airline never to have crashed, which is Qantas. That was basically why he would fly Qantas. True or false, Ben?
True.
In fact, you are kind of wrong.
Oh, really?
A lot wrong, actually, yeah. You see, airlines were so incensed by this scene that lists dates, you know, that the scene was cut by most of their in-flight movies. Okay? Right. So they wouldn't actually show.
That just sounds like professional jealousy.
They just cut it out. Except Qantas, of course. In fact, they even promoted the movie particularly and gave the writers first-class travel, you know, when they actually travel on Qantas. But it's true or false? Well, the fact is, it's false, okay? Qantas has had 12 crashes with 99 fatalities. But here's the way you get around that detail. Only on prop aircraft, okay? So between 1927 and 1951. So they haven't crashed any jets.
I was kind of right, but false. Wow.
Yeah.
So from one controversial thing to another, Mark, after the break, we're going to be talking about Me Before You, which looks like a romantic drama, but is one of the most contentious films around.
Welcome back, Ben and Mark. Let's get cultural.
Mate, there should be T-shirts printed with that on the front of it. Woo! Let's get cultural. We are up to soundtrack choice for this week. And before I talk about this new romantic drama, Me Before You, we thought we would play a song from another movie that deals with someone with a disability. So we chose the film I Am Sam, and we chose this little ditty from it.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the light of the dark black night. birds singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
That was Blackbird, performed by Sarah McLachlan from the I Am Sam soundtrack, which features a lot of Beatles songs. You may or may not have recognized that as a Beatles tune, but the entirety of the I Am Sam soundtrack, the 2002 film that starred Sean Penn, is full of Beatles covers. And here's where I get slightly embarrassed, because when my wife is listening to me talk about this right now, she'll be, I dare say, like just shaking her head, Mark, because she loves the Beatles and she's a massive fan and could probably give you the entire back history of just that one song there and this recording session it was done in, etc., etc. I can't. All I can say is it's a Beatles song.
It's a nice song.
It's a nice song.
I like that.
And everyone...
You shouldn't be ashamed at that level of simplicity, I'm sure.
I've been embracing it my whole life.
There you go.
And it's got everyone from Nick Cave to Rufus Wainwright and the Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam covering songs on the I Am Sam soundtrack. The reason for that is because the character of Sam that Sean Penn plays in the film loves the Beatles songs evidently more than I do, even called his daughter Lucy after Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. But Mark, from one film about a person with a disability, we are soon, my friend, going to talk about one of the most controversial films around.
Well, if you're not into alien invasions, World of Warcraft, Ice Age animation, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, well, you're plumb out of luck. Actually, you may already be considering seeing Me Before You at the cinemas. Maybe you bought one of the 5 million copies which were sold of author Jojo Moyes' book, Me Before You, about a young woman caring for a quadriplegic man. While it sounds like another dose of The Notebook, or Me Before You is far more controversial, though, thanks to the messages it broadcasts about euthanasia and the value of human life.
Can I take you somewhere?
You are so going on a date with Will Trainer.
It's too booby.
Get the red dress out.
I don't want to go in yet. I just want to be a man who's been to a concert with a girl in a red dress. A few minutes more. Loving can heal.
I promised my parents 6 months and that's what I've given them.
But that was before me.
I want him to live, but only if he wants to live.
We can't just let this happen.
You can't change who people are.
I mean, what can you do?
You love them.
Look, I've seen trailers to this and it looked like, well, to be honest, just another romantic drama with the twist of the bloke being in a wheelchair. Is that what it amounts to?
No. No, it doesn't, Mark. I think this is a massive case of false advertising. I expect a lot of people will be everything from angry to confused to disappointed, or all kinds of things. For people who don't know the story, Me Before You, that didn't read the book, such as myself, I wasn't expecting much from this, Mark. But when I did see the trailer that stars Sam Claflin from the Hunger Games films, he's starring as Will Trainer in this. Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones, she's starring as Lou. The trailer presents them as she's the young carer, bubbly, vivacious. It looks like she's coming into Will Trainer's life. He's a guy who suffered an accident 2 years before all the events in the movie. He's a quadriplegic. Looks like she's coming into his life to be that ray of sunshine, to show him that you can cheer up again, mate, because things aren't so bad after all. And I'm trying not to be patronizing, but
yeah,
I thought possibly the film might be heading down that slightly condescending, but, you know, not so bad path. But it doesn't. One of the things that the trailer doesn't do, and also a lot of the promotional material for this film, Me Before You, doesn't do, is demonstrate just how much this movie is about not living. It's about dying, and it's about the choice of dying. Even the hashtag that goes along with this film, Live Boldly, I think is a lie. Like, the film is not about living boldly. It's actually the opposite of that.
Ouch.
Yeah. And I should point out, it's not a good film. It is not. Beyond the kind of tweeness of the romance, probably the first half of the film is this Lou and Will getting to know each other. And Lou, despite having no kind of ambition or direction in her life, no real skills to speak of, is able to get into this guy's life as a carer and look after him. And he's just this grumpy, grouchy, constantly angry at the world bloke. And across the film, she sort of demonstrates to him that, oh, you know, you can smile a bit sometimes and things aren't that bad. I also should point out, he's horribly rich, this guy, seriously rich, and lives with his parents in a castle, an actual castle, and And he has all these things.
Sounds
that, like
the story of every disabled family.
It sounds like it could be a movie that could point out that you can't buy happiness. It could have been a story that does that. It doesn't do that. No, you can get that yourself from the movie if you think about it, which you will do because you'll be so annoyed at what's going on screen, you'll start thinking about other things. But what the film is actually about, and this isn't giving too much away, I've been thinking about how not to speak about the end of this film, but I think people do need to know before going in that this film is so much about Will and his attitude to his life now, and particularly his wish to not live it. That needs to be expressed. And so I'm backing off from trying to talk too much about the story's going.
We're almost talking about a pro-euthanasia film.
I think we are talking about a pro-euthanasia film, but that is going too far because author of this, Jojo Moyes, and she's also the scriptwriter here, she claims that her story, Me Before You, is presenting a story about living well. The point of it overall is to live well, to embrace your life to its fullest. But again, I go back to that's not what we're seeing on screen. A little bit later in the show, we're going to hear from an interview that I got to do during the week with a bloke called Shane Clifton, who isn't just a dean of theology at a Bible college in Sydney. He's a quadriplegic himself. I went to the screening of this with him, Me Before You. I was sitting next to Shane. I was trying not to be coloured by what I thought Shane might be thinking and feeling about seeing, to some degree, his own life represented on screen. He had an accident about 5 or 6 years ago that put him into a wheelchair, and not in a similar fashion to Will. So there's a lot going on, a lot of similarities. So I was thinking about that. We're going to hear from him and his thoughts on the story later on. But even if I wasn't sitting next to a guy who's quadriplegic, I would still be insulted, as you might be able to hear in my voice. I would still be insulted by this movie, mainly because of the way it says it's about something, but it's actually about something entirely different. And what it's actually about, I think, is incredibly offensive when it comes to the value of human life. Incredibly offensive.
Oh, wow. Okay. So obviously not one that Christians are going to take a great deal of joy in seeing, I think. Look, Me Before You was rated PG for mild themes. This is one of the strange things that you can actually talk about this and say it's a mild theme. It's also got sexual references and coarse language. It stars Emilia Clarke, Sam Claflin, and Stephen Peacock, and is at cinemas around Australia. If you want to waste your time seeing it, says Ben, well, you know, you can throw your money down the drain. Might be more effective.
Oh, man, avoid it. Just avoid this film, which is also what's happening around the world. Mark, you just Google online Me Before You outrage and you'll find loads of people with disabilities groups that are really campaigning hard against this film. And I don't think they're being too sensitive. I don't think they've got the short end of the stick. I think that this is a movie that claims to be about something and it's about something else entirely different. Aggravating.
Let me move you on to happier times. In the next edition of Eternity, you've got an article coming out called Same Old, Same Old, which may be happier. But, you know, the all-female remake of Ghostbusters, the latest dose of Star Trek, and another version of Tarzan has got Ben thinking very much about how we're returning to some basic formats again and again and again. We might actually complain about these sort of repetition of ideas, yet the box office results suggest we still enjoy them. We are creatures of habit. What is it that we get out of them? So Ben's going to have a look at that in the next edition of Eternity. Well worth reading that up if you've decided not to go see Me Before You.
And please track us down on Facebook, find The Big Picture Show, and talk to us about Me Before You. I'd love to hear from people who've read the book or seen the movie and what you think about what's going on. Do you agree with me? Do you not agree with me? Or do you think people are being rightly offended or wrongly offended? Love to hear from you about that. Join us for a conversation. I would like to dig in deeper into this movie. You can hear I'm angry about it, but I'd love to hear, particularly from someone who thinks the film is actually saying live well. I'd love to hear you make a case for that. I'm really very curious about that. So find us a Big Picture Show on Facebook now.
Okay, and coming up on the show yet, we have Shane Clifton. As we said, we'll be chatting to him about quadriplegia and what that actually looks like from a Christian perspective. And also we're going to look at a new ABC drama, Clever Man, an Indigenous piece which is actually selling all sorts of expectations. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to The Big Picture.
Just before the break, Ben reviewed Me Before You, a new romantic drama about cinemas. About a quadriplegic man and his carer. In short, Ben's really, really, really not a fan of this film at all.
No.
Okay, but Ben went to a preview of Me Before You with Shane Clifton. We figured we'd give this a fair go. He's the Dean of Theology at Alpha Crucis College in Sydney, and he's also a quadriplegic. This is a unique perspective, just from a spiritual perspective, and also from someone who's really indebted into the film. So after the credits rolled and a few days passed so that the annoyance and aggravation could die down, at least for Ben, Ben caught up with Shane to ask him what he thought about Me Before You and its presentation of disability.
Truth is, I hated it.
Well, what did you really think, Shane?
I've got to be straight. Look, I confess I probably came in with a bias because I read the book before and hated the book. And I hated the film for much the same reasons.
Wow, mate, hate's very strong. What are your reasons for feeling so strongly against Me Before You?
I'm a quadriplegic and I feel badly misrepresented from beginning to end by the main character, Will. Just there's so many things about it that I dislike. He, for example, he looks nothing like a quadriplegic for a start. You'd think if they're going to have an actor playing a quadriplegic, they'd make him look like one. But he's got a perfect body, perfect abs. You know, he lies down virtually nude and he looks like a model. There's none of the sort of bent up nature that'll be part of a quadriplegic's sort of the way their bodies look. He sits like a plank throughout. But quadriplegics, they have spasm, they have different types of movements. This is always the case when disability is portrayed in film. They almost never use disabled actors. And
mate, that's a really good point. I hadn't stopped to think about that, but that's very true. Can you think of any?
No.
No.
Well, actually, I can think of some documentaries. So right. Murderball, for example, is a wonderful documentary on disability. But obviously a documentary is going to use a disabled actor
because they're not acting. So that's some of the shortcomings up on screen, Shane, when it comes to representation. But what about some of the themes going on in Me Before You? And such as, I'll give you an overarching statement from Jojo Moyes, the author of the book and the screenwriter. She said, ultimately, she thinks her story says just live. She thinks Me Before You is trying to speak to its audience and say, just live. What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, she says the theme is live boldly. And I just think, well, that's not what's portrayed at all. From the very beginning, Will is, he's 2 years having been in the chair, but he sits in his room moping. He's a horrible person. He doesn't talk to his carers or his parents with any sort of politeness. It got me thinking, for example, about the nature of happiness. This is a guy who's got an injury and we assume because he's got quadriplegia that he can't be happy. And this is part of the problem with the way in which society thinks about disability. They think you've got quadriplegia, you must be desperately unhappy, you must be angry. But that's actually not the case. Most people I know live fantastic, full and fruitful lives. I mean, here is a rich guy. He could have gone back to the job that he was in before. There was nothing stopping him continue to work. He had enough money that he could have been involved in disabled advocacy. He could have made a lot of good, a lot of difference in people's lives. But instead, the movie focused not on, and the book focused not on what he could do, but on what he couldn't do. So in that sense, it's not about living boldly because it looks at this guy and all it sees is he's a quadriplegic. He must be able to do nothing.
Now, Shane, you're Dean of Theology at Alpha Crucis Bible College in Sydney. How does your Christian faith shape your reaction to what you see in the pages of Me Before You and what you see up on screen?
At its heart, Christianity is about every person being valued, every person being made in the image of God, every person being under the care of God. Sometimes I think Christians narrow salvation down to whether or not you go to heaven and hell. But I think God's got a much bigger view, maybe a better way, a more healthy way of thinking about salvation is to think about God wants a person to flourish. God wants to take a person's life and make something meaningful out of it. And so when I come to a film like this and I see a character like Will or I think about my own life, I think God would want Will to flourish, to make the most of the opportunities before him.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously then it also raises questions like euthanasia in respect to spinal cord injury. And Christian faith will have us conclude that God wants people to live, that our times are in God's hands. But I think the problem with this particular film is that really it purports to being about euthanasia, but it's not. It's about suicide. And if it was any other person who was contemplating suicide, we wouldn't be helping them go to Dignitas. We'd be saying to them, look, let's take you to a psychologist so you can get some psychological care. But because this guy happens to have a quadriplegic, we think, well, it's right to be contemplating euthanasia, but spinal cord injury is not a terminal disease. So I think it's confusing its categories there.
That's Shane Clifton, who's an academic in theology, but is also a quadriplegic. You can find out more of Shane's thoughts at shaneclifton.com, including a really interesting blog post that he did recently, Mark, about X-Men Apocalypse. He likes that movie a lot more than we did, but he really likes X-Men because he thinks that it's got one of the best presentations on screen of disability, where he sees the way mutants and mutation is demonstrated in X-Men as something of a representative of disability and the way society treats disability, but also the way you can look at disabilities as a superpower if you kind of turn it on its head, which is a nice little pointer towards the end of the show, where you're going to do top five best presentations of disability on screen, in your opinion.
Yep.
Wow, that is coming up later in the show. What do you think about when it comes to a classic Australian TV dramas? Do you think about like Prisoner or A Town Like Alice, Against the Wind, A Country Practice? A Country Practice, I guess some people would list Cookie and his wombat, so in that, I suppose.
High points of Australia.
High points. We love our Australiana, but let's face it, we tend to love it. Well, I'm trying to look for a better way of describing this than white. We tend to have a lot of white Australian TV dramas. Indigenous programs have struggled to break into the mainstream, let's be frank. However, a new locally produced show with a distinctly Aboriginal take on history is not only making waves here, it's being picked up by the US market with a second season already in the pipeline. It's called Clever Man, and it's a science fiction twist on the spiritual world of Aboriginal dreaming.
I want the zone cleared.
We're being hunted like dogs.
Get them out!
More people are gonna die unless you act.
Why should I care what happens to some zombies?
That's your job, Clever Man.
Time for you to step up.
Today is the day we take back what belongs to us.
You people are a disgrace.
We are family, now and forever.
You're the ones that are subhuman.
Clever Man is an Australian, New Zealand, American production that premiered on Sundance TV in the United States and on ABC Australia the following day. It's creating waves, and quite rightly it should. It's a fantastic production. The six-part drama series reimagines several stories of the Aboriginal dreaming in a kind of a modern dystopian world, modern-day Australia, in fact. These sort of Hairies, these ancient characters of Aboriginal myth, have actually come out of the woodwork in Australia, revealed themselves to be true, and now we're all trying to cope with the fact that they exist inside of a modern society. The reason why we've actually got it in our special today, quite apart from the fact that it deserves attention, it's really good stuff, is because these Hairies are seen as subhuman. In some ways, the same way that people look at disabled people, this idea that they are less than human. And yet what we discover through the entire series is that they are actually just as real and feeling as us, and they have as many struggles. This entire show, Clever Man, is actually a great foil for talking about how we talk about disability, but also how we talk about immigrants and how we talk about racism. And all these sorts of issues are picked up in a fantastic way. Honestly, you wouldn't believe that this level of science fiction could come out of Australia today, but it is just great.
So it's not just a drama about spooky creatures from deep in the outback. And the Hairies, are they werewolves? They can't sound like werewolves.
Not,
no.
They're not werewolves. They're basically just kind of Dreamtime characters who are hairier than us.
Right.
And so in some cases, they try and pass as normal human beings. Almost, if you like, they've been shamed into doing so. So they shave their skin and things like that. But there's always something a little bit off.
So it's not like them out to get us. That's not what Clever Man's about.
No. They're trying to actually be part of life just like everybody else. This is, like I said, the tension here is really quite clever, because you could almost see these people as Syrian immigrants. Okay, or you could see them as people who've come from war-torn Europe or something like that, trying to fit into a society that is not sure that they really want them around because they're different, or because they do things, you know, differently and speak differently.
So you're saying Clever Man's quite clever about the way it makes political and social observations. Does it make other ones, apart from those that you just mentioned there, to do with immigration particularly and racism?
Sure. One of the things it has to do with the way that we handle sort of border protection. I mean, you've got the whole idea of the camps, so to speak, or the centres that we have that sometimes immigrants are placed in. And this is handled in the drama too. There's a whole idea of the zone where all of the Hairies are placed and are not allowed to come out of. Of course, normal people are allowed to go in and out of these zones. And in fact, the normal people can actually be quite abusive in the way that they treat these people. And yet, at the same time, they're constantly referred to in the political realms of the program as a problem, as a challenge, rather than an opportunity to show grace or love. They're, in fact, just like the way we see some of our immigrant issues, if you like, in Australia today.
Any concerns, you reckon, for Christian viewers when it comes to the Dreamtime content in Clever Man?
Not really. I mean, no more so than when you look at Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief that you're worried about Greek mythology, or when you're watching Vikings and you're really worried about the Norse gods that are represented on screen. They are basically plot devices. But that's not to say that there aren't spiritual problems with the program. You see, the problem is not Aboriginal Dreamtime being used as a plot device within the series itself. The problem is a very 21st century one. It's the idea of a balance being the most important thing.
A balance in the universe.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So because white Australia has got balance out of whack in Clever Man, then people have to take action. And because balance is out of whack, the whole spiritual realm is out of whack. And so you've got more beasts from the Dreamtime emerging and doing terrible things. This is, I might add, and people should be careful, a bit of a horror, and it's also, it's got some strong sex and strong violence. It is MA 15+ and rated so appropriately, but it is one that I think the spiritual issue is kind of glossed over. The idea that somehow this world is just in struggle with itself, black versus white, and somehow white's got to get to the top again. This is not the world we believe in as Christians. God knows what he's doing. We've got an opportunity to get on the program or not.
Clever Man is an excellent Australian drama, according to Mark. Stars Hunter Page Lockhart, Rob Collins, Ian Glenn and Deborah Mailman. And it's on the ABC Thursdays from 9:30 p.m.
Still to come on the show, we've got The Vault, with actually an opportunity to talk about the burdens of having too much ability. That'll be fun. And also my top five positive portrayals of disability on the big screen. Thanks for joining us. Me Before You and Clever Man are wildly different beasts, but they're linked by featuring characters who have something not so normal about them. Very soon I'm going to unveil the top five best presentations of disability on the big screen, at least the ones I like the most. But before that, for our Vault segment this week, we asked Insights reviewer Russ Matthews to fossick through the whopping great forest that his movies ever made and to find a great movie about the burden of exceptional abilities. So Russ, what's your recommendation for a super movie about suffering from being, quote-unquote, too able?
I picked Unbreakable, 2000 Unbreakable.
That follow-up to The Sixth Sense by writer-director M. Night Shyamalan. From memory, I don't think that film was received as well as The Sixth Sense, which was just a massive phenomena.
Right. Well, I think that that's what the issue was, is that it was The Sixth Sense was such a huge hit, and Unbreakable was such a different film from The Sixth Sense, because unfortunately it also had Bruce Willis in it. So I think people were thinking that it was like The Sixth Sense or The Seventh Sense or something like that. But now, looking back on it, I've gone through some of the different movie aficionados that are out there. They would probably say this would be his best film.
Now, Russ, explain for us what, in a nutshell, Unbreakable is about.
Unbreakable is about is the story of the security guard David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, who's actually in a major train accident, and he's the only survivor. And then he's confronted by a mysterious man named Mr. Glass, or Elijah, who's actually played by Samuel L. Jackson, is confronting him with the idea that, well, you survived. Maybe there's a reason you survived, and maybe you have some sort of special gift in regards to that. And so it's kind of him going through this journey of kind of considering, do I really have a special power? Because really, if you look at his life, it's really kind of a boring, mundane life of just a security guard.
Ah, Russ, I'm starting to finally see why you chose Unbreakable. When we gave you this assignment of finding a movie about someone with extraordinary abilities but having the burden of that. Now, I thought you'd just go straight to Spider-Man and find with great power comes great responsibility and throw that back. I just wanted to say that. But you're going with Unbreakable with this character of David Dunn. Now, explain a little bit more about how you think he is burdened, weighed down by the possibility that he has extraordinary gifts.
What I really enjoyed about this film was that it really kind of happened all within the framework of his family. And when he was in high school, he was a star athlete, but his wife actually told, or his not then wife, but girlfriend, told him, well, I could never marry somebody who is a star athlete.
And well, so couldn't actually marry someone who's so amazing.
It was amazing or extraordinary.
Yeah.
And so he actually suppressed all of his gifts and abilities, married her for the sake, so he sacrificed for her.
He became quote-unquote normal, ordinary.
Ordinary. Whoa. For her benefit. But yet throughout his life, he always felt like, there's something more that my life really should mean more, that I should do more with my life. And so really this whole, the train wreck, actually ended up causing him this bit of suffering, caused him to kind of consider what he could do more.
Pulling all that together, I was just thinking how a lot of us in real life kind of fantasize about having extraordinary powers like superpowers and that kind of thing. Yeah, it seems like Unbreakable is presenting something far different. Now, how well do you think Unbreakable is actually representing us at that point?
Well, that's an interesting one to be able to kind of look at that contrast, especially when you look at the contrast of good and evil, but also extraordinary versus ordinary. But I think one of the big things, especially what we look at, you can see in the Bible, is that we all have been given certain gifts, certain abilities, that God has a plan for each one of us, that we should be able to use those gifts. And I think many times, sometimes we suppress them or push them aside because either we're embarrassed by the fact that we may be extraordinary in certain areas that others are not. And opposed to celebrating that, we sometimes suppress those, opposed to really looking at what God says. I mean, he even says it in 1 Corinthians 12, really looking at the idea that there's many activities, many gifts that he gives, but that also that he gives them and he desires for us to use them for his glory.
That was Russ Matthews, reviewer with Insight's website, insights.uca.org.au, giving us our vault choice for this week, Unbreakable, talking about the burden of great abilities. For more of Russ's reviews, go to insights.uca.org.au, including his thoughts on Me Before You. Here's a spoiler about Russ's review, Mark. He also doesn't like it at all for many of the same reasons, but he also elaborates further on why he found that film so objectionable when it comes to everything from the way it presents euthanasia to the way it presents value of life. That's just a little teaser about Russ's review over at insights.uca.org.au.
Well, we've reached what we like to refer to as one of the highlights of the show, our top five. And this week, we're looking at the top five positive portrayals of disability. Now, lots of different ways we could have got at this. And I've got to say straight off the bat, I want to think of this more as like a collection of five great films because it's hard to weigh them against each other, even though I do have a favourite right at the end there. And there are ones in it that are just not there, and mainly because we've actually mentioned them already. You know, for example, I Am Sam's not in my list because...
No,
it's not in there because we had the song earlier in the show. You should actually wind back if you're coming in late or go get the podcast because it's well worth it. We've been talking about great... differently abled productions all the way through and great performances. But here's five, starting with, number five.
Five.
My Left Foot, 1989.
Oh, I'm surprised that's only at number... Oh, sorry. I keep... Every week we list things and we count down. I'm so used to us counting down in order of priority. Sorry, go back to the bit where you said, in no particular order necessarily, here are five great performances.
Well, actually, I had to put this one in at number five rather than number one, even though I am assured it's a great performance.
Mark, you're just outing yourself on it. You haven't seen My Left Foot?
I haven't seen My Left Foot. And that's
what kind of film
thing.
/ TV reviewer are you?
I know. This is actually a fantastic film. And it's on.
So you've heard.
I've got a bucket list of films, okay? And this is so close to the top. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't got around seeing
it. I can
it.
Confirm for you, it's a great film.
Daniel Day-Lewis and Brenda Fricker. Basically, Daniel Day-Lewis plays Christy Brown, an Irishman born with cerebral palsy who could control only his left foot. He grew up in a poor working class family and became a great writer and artist. Now, Daniel Day-Lewis and Brenda Fricker won the Academy Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role,
that's right, yeah,
and Best Actress in a Supporting Role. And the film also got nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Director, Best Pick. Are you getting the picture here?
Yeah.
Okay, this is one that you should not take a lead from me. You should see it now.
Okay, go and see it now.
In fact, I'll go home and I'll go watch it. But I've got to say, the producer of the show just said, look, if this isn't on the list, she'll be leaving me. And she is my wife, so that's where it's there.
Four.
Okay, but here's one I have seen and I love incredibly. What's Eating Gilbert Grape from 1993?
Great choice.
directed by Lasse Hallström and starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Johnny Depp, Juliette Lewis. Like,
was that his first big screen role, Leonardo DiCaprio? Do you remember?
It was. Yes. It was. And in fact, it's just a fantastic production. He got a lot of kudos out of his presentation as the younger brother of Gilbert, played by Johnny Depp. So Arnie actually has a degree of autism, and he lives alongside of Gilbert with their morbidly obese mother in this home without dad, and they're just struggling to make ends meet. It is like a series of jagged pieces all in one bag.
Such an unusual family to be depicted on screen, isn't it? Like, it's sort of unlike any other. I can't think of a real comparison piece
and
to what's
real,
in Gilbert
there's
Grape.
There's real tension all the way through, you know, because basically Gilbert Grape has this struggle of trying to deal with mum, who's morbidly obese on one end, and with Arnie, who's, you know, profoundly autistic on the other end. And yet, just the way that Leonardo DiCaprio handles Arnie's character is just beautiful.
I think it might be his best performance.
I would go as far as to say it's probably the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah.
Talk about peaking early.
I'll say.
But one of the things I like about the presentation is he really captures the freedom that some kids who live with autism have. They are less worried and less embarrassed about their condition than we are, who are circling around the edges, so to speak. You know, and I feel like this is just a wonderful capturing of that. In fact, actually, DiCaprio said one of the great things about playing Arnie is that he could actually just live a life that had no limitations, no embarrassment, no worry about what other people would think. And I think sometimes people should step back and go, gee, you know, people with this sort of disability may not be as disabled as we think. 3. Well, I can't go past my only foreign film mention in this. Okay?
Oh, finally, we're getting to some foreign stuff.
Yes, and you'll be happy to know it's French. Yes, 2011's The Intouchables.
Oh, here's where I out myself as I haven't actually seen that.
I've
heard exquisite things about Intouchables.
We should actually have a film weekend over at my place where we'll just watch Daniel Day-Lewis with My Left Foot and The Intouchables starring Francois Clouzet.
Which you've actually seen,
I have seen this 3 times and bought the film. You know, it is just fantastic. I love this. It's set in Paris. It's the life of a kind of an aristocratic intellectual fellow called Philippe, and he's a quadriplegic millionaire. So there is this idea of, can you buy happiness just because you've
got
money and
success?
So
a little bit like Me Before You, but it sounds like much, much different.
Much better done. And in fact, the interesting thing about this is that Felipe, who's the guy ostensibly with the disability, is the one who's helping the able-bodied character played by Omar Sy, this African Driss, who's, you know, just basically trying to get welfare, doesn't want much more out of life than to say that he applied for a job as Felipe's carer, and yet Philippe brings him out of himself. It's a nice turning of the tables.
Man, that sounds like such a positive antidote to Me Before You. I feel like happier just thinking about that storyline.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea where in which the seemingly disabled person is really the person who's got a much better take on how life has to be. 2. Which brings me to my first kids' film, okay? Because I was really personally touched by this film in 2014. Wreck-It Ralph, directed by Richard Moore.
Wow.
Known for
that
the Simpsons.
That is an unexpected choice, Mark.
It's an incredible ability film. Joe, I'm losing my words as I'm trying to say this. I'm quite excited about Wreck-It Ralph. If you are like me as a parent and you want your kids to grow up with positive pictures of the struggles that other kids might face, you can put them in front of Wreck-It Ralph and they'll absorb this, you know, almost by osmosis. Wreck-It Ralph is this sort of cute computer game character who's frustrated, has anger issues. He wants to be in different games. He basically wants to be loved. In the process of game jumping in this cartoon from game to game, he comes across a character called Vanellope, who's called by the other characters the Glitch. She has a pixelating problem in her programming, basically. She flashes in and out, and this can create issues for people who are around her and difficulties for herself. And yet, the only problem she really has is that other people can't accept that this is an issue for her. And it's seen in the right way. I loved what Shane said earlier in our program. You should wind back if you haven't actually heard this here on the podcast. Shane talks about how disability can actually be seen as a positive thing. You can turn the tables and talk about it something like a superhero thing. Well, in this case, Vanellope's glitch is actually an advantage to her. It's something that can actually make her valuable to other people and give them a whole new perspective rather than something that we all have to carry and as a cross to bear, so to speak. 1. But that brings me to my top film. And I've already, look, anybody who was tuned in last week knows that I've already said this is one of my favorite films of the year, and because of its disability thing, Dory. Finding Dory
at cinemas now.
At cinemas now. Look, I almost feel strongly enough about this to say, as parents, you owe it to your kids' education to take them to see a film that puts disability so positively.
That's a huge call.
And challenges us, particularly as Christian parents, to say, look, how are we facing this with our kids? Are we actually doing harm to people who have a disability by just being sort of complacent in the way that, expecting less of them, or maybe even just in a well-meaning way, putting them down? Yet Dory, as a character played by Ellen DeGeneres, is one who struggles through this whole concept of memory loss, both as a child and as an adult fish. It's so playful, it slips right under your guard, and yet the whole way through you're asking yourself, you know, should they really be treating her that way? Because isn't she just as good as them? Isn't she just someone who's really hoping to achieve the best in her life that she can achieve? And so I see, as a Christian, this whole picture, this whole ability to see people as God made them, you know, his best in their life. And that's something I want to support the cinemas.
Migration is about going home, which is where you're from.
How do the stingrays all know where to go?
Instinct. Something deep inside you that feels so familiar that you have to listen to it.
My mom, my dad, I have a family.
We will never forget you, Dory.
What if I forget you?
I miss them. You know what that feels like?
Yes.
Then we better get going.
For Mark's full review on Finding Dory, as he just mentioned, you reviewed it on the show last week, thebigpicturewebsite.com. You can catch all of Mark's thoughts, which, here's a spoiler if you missed it. He loved it. loved Finding Dory. Loved it.
More than you liked me before you.
So that was last week's show. This was this week's show. Mark, what's coming up on next week's show?
Well, we've got Independence Day Resurgence. It's taken about 20 years for us to get there, but here is the next one.
And despite what I called it right at the start of the show, Ice Age Collision Course is the official title of the fifth Ice Age film. It's at cinemas now. We'll be talking about that next week.
Plus, Central Intelligence. No, not us people. We're actually talking about the film.
Next week, I reckon I'm still going to be... Yeah, I just remembered I'm Ben McKechnie.
And I will be Mark Hadley, for your pleasure.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.